beginning of Channel 2, Channel 2 over, and a continuation of Visit Mr. Eastman after work. And the last day of this long job, this Tuesday, the 14th of May, 74. Channel 2 over, and a continuation of the Visit of Mr. Eastman this Tuesday, the 14th, at the end of the day. And the end of this is the end of the. We just had a satellite count. This is 14th of May, 74.
Now see if you can find my picture in
Journal 1939 and 40 of the Dairy Farmers Union.
I was a Madison County chairman of the Dairy Farmers Union from 37 to 41. I started in as an organizer.
Yeah.
Signing them up.
Who is she? Congratulations. From your senator.
Yeah.
She's a senator, Faye. Here, this big lady.
She's a senator up in Ogdensburg. That's the northern part of the state.
Huh. Oh, that's Mayor LaGuardia.
Yeah.
God, they got so many advertisements in here. Who is that?
Yeah.
Sam Hsu. He's chairman of one of the county things. You know him?
Yeah, I knew them all.
Now, I can't see tell in this picture. Are you in there?
No.
Are these all county chairmen?
Yeah.
Chairman?
Chairman and secretary.
Yeah. And you was working with all them.
Yeah. Sure, and I was the state auditor 1 year. That fellow there was, he rode a good many miles with me.
Frank Brill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was he a roughneck?
He was one of the state committeemen there, and he lived just a little ways from me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were all in it together.
Yeah.
Well, is this that fellow with a short neck?
No. And this picture's over on another place.
Oh, is it? I want to see him.
Wait a minute. What's his name? Mr. Eastman.
No, sir. Mr. Eastman, I wouldn't have. No. I wouldn't have recognized that. No, sir. No, sir. I was just going to pass right on.
All things.
He's that, a pretty nice looking fella, see?
That woman there, that was her father that I said rode a good many miles with me.
Oh, it is.
And here's the fella there that was the fighter, the wrestler.
Oh, that's that Pesco.
Yeah.
What? It swung you around.
Yeah.
Huh?
Emery
Pesco.
He
the one who did you this way?
Yeah.
Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is this about him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't read it or else I'd do it. Just to show what hard-headed people union members are, take the case of Emery Pesco of Hamilton, Madison County.
Yeah.
During the strike, you read it. I can't see it. You see it?
Yeah.
During the strike.
During the strike, a strike baker armed with a club beat Emery over the head, breaking the club in three pieces. Emery looked up and asked, "Did you mean that?" And when the club wheeler indicated there was no accident, Emery rose up and beat him with his fist.
Well, I'll be darned.
And that's in the bulletin.
They even put it in the bulletin.
Yeah.
What do you say about you, Miss Eastman?
And it says up there, undeterred by the 10 dairy farmers, dairymen's league plants in the county, Madison County farmers entered upon the strike with full enthusiasm and determination. League farmers and non-leaguers began withholding milk right from the start until the league officials began putting pressure on, and the state troopers and the sheriff's deputies starting escorting the milk in at all hours. The public sponsored the strikers' loyalty. The mayor of Canastota instructed the village police not to escort any milk to the plants in the village. Half of the milk supply in Madison County was withheld on the first day. Much credit is due to the Wampsville producers who voted to close their cooperative during the strike. Many other plants could have profited by their example. Because we dared to speak the truth about the milk business, we were branded as outlaws, rebels, communists, members of the CIO, and such. Such comments, together with a mass of dealer propaganda since the strike, prove that our Dairy Farmers Union is gaining and that it is the only organization actually helping the milk producers.
Is that so?
Yeah. And boy, we went right to town down there.
That Dairy Farmers Union did it.
They had a picture of me standing out there alone, and they had underneath it there, they had the Madison County outlaw. I had that picture, and Evelyn burned it up.
Oh, she did.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, when we was getting ready to move the stuff down from up there, when we moved down here, you know,
yeah,
Evelyn burned up a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
I had a lot of union papers and one thing and another, and she burned them all up.
Well, you keep that.
She didn't care for that, huh? Say, that's nice. Well, how'd you happen to save that one, Miss Eastman?
Oh, I took it out. And that fellow there, they had a meeting up in Pulaski. And he was there to the meeting. And I said, Jerry, they'd been raising hell with me down there in Madison County in the strike, see? And I didn't get in jail, but there was a bunch of them that did, and I always had to go. The sheriff would call me up around noon or 1 o'clock and tell me where the boys was located in the jail, and I'd have to go and get them bailed out.
Is that right?
And this fellow here, he was on the state committee, and he was up there, and he lived in Pulaski, and he was there to the meeting that night, and I said, Jerry, if they get me in jail, will you come down and bail me out? Not by a damn sight, he said. If you don't know more than getting in jail, he said, you can stay there for all of me. And by a deed, you know, after the milk meeting, I was the main speaker up there that night. I had put on a radio broadcast about the strike and one thing and another up in Syracuse.
Oh, you had?
And I went from Syracuse on up to Pulaski to that meeting up there, see, that big meeting up there. And when I called for pickets to come on duty the next morning, there was about 25 or 30 women, Polish women.
Yeah.
Jesus, and they got right up and volunteered and say, they told me afterwards that they were the meanest bunch of people that you ever see go on a milk strike. Why? They said that they dump milk just like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, after the meeting, we went over to this restaurant and had a big supper before we went home. See, God, I was about 110, 115 miles away from home.
Oh.
And went over there and had this big supper and one thing and another. And Jerry said he didn't feel good. Well, I said, Jesus, Jerry, take care of yourself. Because I'm going home, he says, and lay down, he says, and rest a little bit. Well, you know, I hadn't been home more than 15 or 20 minutes, and the telephone rung. And it was the Syracuse Herald. Up in Syracuse, they called me on the telephone and wanted to know if I knew that Jerry Loomis was dead. I said, no, my God. I said, a couple of 3 hours ago, while I was eating supper with him in the restaurant up there in Pulaski. He said, we know all about it. And we wondered if you knew he died. And I said, no. Well, God, he says, he went home and he told his wife he didn't feel good. And for her to make him a cup of coffee, and he was going to lay down a minute while she was making the coffee. She made the coffee, and she went to take him a cup of coffee, and God, he laid there dead in an it.
I'll swear.
And so they dedicated the book to him.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
J.R. Loomis, dedication to J.R. Loomis, member of the General Organization Committee.
He and I rode the roads together a good many miles out signing up for members.
Oh, which, you mean this one here?
No, this one.
Oh, you did? Signing up members. Well, now, how'd you go about that, Mr. Eastman?
Well, we just take and go to the farmers there and tell them that we represented the Dairy Farmers Union and what we were trying to do to get a better price for the milk and one thing or another, and they want to know if they wouldn't sign up to give 5 cents a hundred on their milk checks towards the union to help us along on it and join up as members of it. And most of them would sign up. Once in a while, you'd get a hold of a hard nut that you couldn't crack.
Why wouldn't? What would stand in the way?
Well, geez, the nickel a hundred for milk. They didn't want to give up a nickel a hundred.
Yeah.
Geez, now you turn around, you know, and we'd have the meetings with the dealers, and make them sign up for 25 or 30 cents a hundred more for the milk. And well, them fellows there that wouldn't sign up with us there, they'd take the 25 or 30 cents a hundred, but they didn't want to pay out a nickel a hundred to help us along.
Oh, I see.
They were willing to take the increase, but they didn't want to help get it.
Well, now, Mr. Eastman, you was in good company in them days. There was a good many people who were agitating.
Well, at that time, we had connection with all the milk dealers in New York City. There were 212 dealers in New York City.
Good Lord.
And there were 12 of them was Irishmen, and the 200 was Jews.
Yeah.
And if some of them Jews were just as damn black as any nigger in Florida.
Yeah.
And I know this Jerry Loomis here, he was we were having a milk meeting in Utica one day, and this colored fellow was there, and Jesus, and he was, he was dolled out to beat all. He had one of them great big red neckties on, you know, God, that wide, and oh, Jesus, he was dolled out to beat all.
Yeah.
And I says to Jerry, I says, is that colored guy there a chauffeur for one of the milk dealers? And Jerry says, hell no, he says. He's the owner of the High Bridge dairy down there. He said, down too far from you. Well, it wasn't. He said, he's the one that owns and operates that down there. His name is Sachs, S-A-X. Nate Sachs.
Yeah. And he a Jew?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a Jew.
Yeah. But he was... He really checked out.
Yeah. And then there was a plant owner, his name was Morris Cohen. And I was sending milk to him. Well, we was having this milk meeting out there, and it just happened that the checks didn't come to the station there, see? And he was 3-4 days late with the checks. And he was one of them fellows, he'd get up in the milk meeting, you know, and swing his arms and belly ache to beat all of how many milk producers he represented and one thing and another, and go on to the hell of a lingo and what they'd do and what they wouldn't do and one thing and another thing. Yes, I listened to him, the more I listened to him, the madder I got. So when he got done talking, I asked for the floor. And I got up there, and I could swing my arm just as damn much as he could.
Was that right?
And after I'd given him a little talk to him, one thing and another, about the nut business, one thing and another, now I said, I've got a few remarks to make to Mr. Coyne. I said, it just so happens that our milk checks are 3-4 days late. And I said, it inconvenienced a lot of the farmers that figure on taking their checks to pay their bills on a certain day, and their bills come due that day, and when they don't have the money to pay them, I says, it inconvenienced them. And I says, so, I said, Mr. Cohen, I want to tell you, the next time that our checks are late, I don't know as I said my that our checks, I said the checks are late, and the next time that the checks are late, you won't get any milk until after the checks have been distributed. And I said a little bit more, and then I went over and I sat down, and Jesus, old Murray, he jumps up and he runs up to Jerry Loomis, the chairman of the meeting there. He said, who's that fellow? He says, a belly aching so and giving me a hell of a black eye here in front of all of my friends and one thing and another. Jerry told me about it afterward. Well, now, Jerry said, I'll tell you. He's the county chairman there, he says, in Madison County. And he says, if he says you won't get any milk, he says, you just won't get any. Because he said, now that fella means business. And when he says you don't get any milk, you don't. Jesus. Old Maury come right down there where I was, and Jesus, he wanted to get acquainted with me right off quick. it'll tickle you, some of the things that happened in them meetings and one thing and another.
Well, that I don't see anything much better than that that could happen, Mr. Eastman.
Well, during the milk strike, during 1 year up there in the milk strike, over in Salisville, there's three milk stations over there, three different companies. One was the Dairyman's League, and one was Jutter, and the other was Mercantile. Well, this fellow over there, he was a great friend of this Jutter. And he sent his milk to Jutter's and one thing and another. His name was Thomas. And so they were holding the milk back, you know, from all of them there in the county. I had the county just about dried up. And this old Thomas, he called a meeting over there and wanted them to bring the milk the next morning to Jutter over there. The Jutter had signed up with the union to pay the union price for milk. And he called that meeting over there, and he was up there and explaining it all out and one thing and another. And I sat there and listened to him for a little while, and finally I got up and I asked for the floor, and I said, Mr. Thomas, just when did Mr. Jetter sign up with the union to pay the union price for milk? Well, he says, this morning about 10 o'clock. Well, now, I said, Mr. Thomas, let me inform you that I've talked with Archie Wright. He's a state chairman. At 6 o'clock tonight, and Mr. Jetter hadn't signed up, no agreement, at 6 o'clock tonight. Now, I says, I'm going to tell you people here that I don't care what Mr. Thomas has told you or what he intends to do. But I'm going to tell you that Jetter's dairy is going to be dry tomorrow morning just the same as it has been. And this Pesco here, he jumped up, you know, and he runs over there and he grabs old Thomas, and Thomas was a hell of a big guy. And he says, shall we throw him out of the meeting or kill him right here on the floor? I says, oh, let him go. I says, we'll just treat him just as he just don't know what he's talking about. Now, I said, he's a pal of old Jetter. I said, and Jetter's probably giving $25 or maybe a little bit more to come here and put this meeting on to get that milk tomorrow morning. But I said, I'm going to tell it, he ain't going to get it. And by God, he didn't get it either.
Yeah.
Mr. Eastman, you were tough.
Huh?
You were tough.
Well, I was tough with him. I could be pretty damn tough in them days. I used to go right around, you know, and it's easy to put out there, somebody had a milk meeting on there, you know, and if they wasn't putting it just as they was, I'd steal the meeting on them.
Oh, you would?
Well, sure, that's just the same as I stole a meeting on Thomas there.
Yeah.
I just think I should walk right in, and I get right up there and get on the floor, and I could tell, I could tell the milk business in them days, and don't you think I couldn't? Because
yeah.
I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, you'd been in the milk business from everything except driving a truck.
Everything but driving a truck.
Yeah. How did you get it, huh?
See, I was a maintenance man for 5 different milk stations up there.
Yeah.
Geez, and I put in all kinds of milk machinery.
All at one time?
Well, all over the years there, you know.
Yeah.
So they couldn't tell me anything about the manufacturing of the milk,
because
I'd been through it all.
Yeah. How about that?
And at that time, I don't know how it is right now, but I presume it's just the same, but all of this skim milk that they're selling on the market today, the farmers don't get a nickel for it. That milk is all sold at the butter and cheese price.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm. And that's the lowest notch. So that they get paid for the cream content of the milk, and they don't get a damn thing out of the skim milk. That's all profit to the milk manufacturer.
But we pay just about the same.
Jesus, you pay just as much for the skim milk as you do for the whole milk.
Yeah, sure do.
You go right down there at that convenience store down there next to me. At 99 cents for 2 quarts, whether it's whole milk or whether it's skim milk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I go in and I get 2 quarts, a two-quart carton of the skim milk and a 2-quart carton of the whole milk. And I give her 2 $1 bills. I said, here, 2, 2, and 2. The 2 of milk and $2, and you give me 2 pennies back. So you're 2, 2, and 2.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'll swear. How'd you ever get in so deep in that milk business, Mr. Beesman? You were the main thing.
Well, I'll tell you. They put on an organization milk meeting, and I didn't know enough to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, yeah.
And the next thing I knew, I was in it.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of cows and was sending a lot of milk to the factory. And
oh, you had cows too?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to milk around 25 or 30 cows.
I didn't know you did that.
Why are you doing all this other work?
Huh? Yeah. Back in them days in the winter when we used to draw ice, I'd get up in the morning at 3 o'clock. I'd go to the barn and clean the stables. Get the stables cleaned. I'd feed the cows. And start the milking machine. That is, I'd start feeding the cows and start the milking machine. I had 2 cows that milked harder than blazes. And while the machine was milking them 2 cows, I could get the rest of the cows fed. Well, then as soon as the cows were fed, see, I could take them 2 double units of milkers and keep right on the milking, see, and the machines would milk the cows and I'd strip them, see. And I could just keep up with it and keep it right going. Well, then I'd get the milking done and the cows and feed the cows hay and get ready to go with the milk. I'd go up and get my breakfast, go with the milk and get back down to the pond and get the first load of ice in the morning. And then I generally got the last load at night, and that'd give me more ice than any team on the job drawing, don't you see?
Yeah.
And I had that little pair of Morgans, and boy, them little bastards, they could draw, and those things they couldn't. They'd draw just as much ice to a load as the teams that weighed a ton apiece.
Yeah.
because they were quick. And they're going up the hill to the milk station. There was a bunch of pitch holes. You know what pitch holes are, don't you? In the snow track, don't you know what pitch holes are? Well, they'd eat in, you know, you see, and you'd have a hole in like that, and then you'd be going like that. Well, you take my little team, you know, they'd go in like that, you know, and they'd give it a snap and held the weight of the load would push it half up the next hill there, you know, and right down in, right up again. I'd stop them before I get to them pitch holes. And let them get their breath good, you know, and Jesus, I'd go up through them pitch holes to beat all. There's another fella had a pair of horses that weighed a ton apiece. And Jesus, they'd let that, they were big, you know, they'd let that load of ice down the pitch hole, and then they got to lift and dig like the devil to get it up else, you know, out of there. There's a woman lived right there side of them. She went downtown and bought a new buggy whip. And this old fella, he'd get in there, you know, with them pair of horses, you know, and he'd whip and slash to beat all to get them to draw that up out of there. She went right out there and she told him if he, the next time that he whipped them horses, she was going to whip him. He laughed at her. So she goes right down, she buys that damn good buggy whip. And she comes up there and he, the next load he comes up through and he starts in whipping and slashing. She goes right out and by Jesus, boy, she, well, she whipped the living devil out of that fella. Yeah, he went and had her arrested and one thing and another, and geez, they come here having quite a time over that.
Yeah.
And she took and put that whip right onto him. Boy, she really laced him. She told him to watch Art Eastman go up through there with a load of ice. Says he don't have to whip and slash his horses. Well, he says, ain't ever, everybody ain't got a team like he has.
Oh, I wish I could have seen those horses.
But you know, I wouldn't have more thought of going to bed at night or going to the house at night without cleaning them horses off and rubbing their legs with straw than I'd think of going to bed without my supper.
Yeah.
I always cleaned them off good every night and rubbed their legs with straw. Yeah.
Well, you didn't get to stay in bed very long.
Not too long, no. But I was tougher than all outdoors along about that time, you know. Boy, I used to could work in them days.
Lord help us. Now, was that at this same time?
Yeah.
You mean, and then you traveled all over?
Yeah.
And everything?
Well, no. That was just before that. It was just before this. That I was on the ice business.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. Well, now when you was doing this, did you still have 2,500 cows?
Yeah. Well, but I was a letting the farm on shares, at this time.
Was you?
Yeah, I let the farm out on shares.
Well, you had to have a little. You had to have a little relief.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
But you see, around 1937 or 38, we quit using the ice in the milk station there, and I put in them ice plants.
Oh.
See?
Yeah.
Put in them big ice machines in there that, it was a good deal like refrigerators. See, they had this refrigerant in there, you know, and them big pumps. They pumped that calcium water. Have them tanks, see, this ammonia run through them machines, and it cooled the water in the tanks that had this calcium in it. You see, in that calcium, you could run that right down to 25 or 30 below zero, and it wouldn't thicken up.
Oh, really?
And then they'd take them tanks would be right down about 25 or 30 below zero, and that would take and pump, you take and pump that through the milk plant there to cool the milk. You see, that run through, they had these milk coolers. They was a good deal, like setting them two up there like that. And this refrigerant running pipes around through the middle of this. Well, your milk come in on the top here, and your milk run right down over this here, see, and that cooled it right down.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had that went into that milk tank up there, or the brine tank up there, and there was a fellow from Utica. I didn't do too much on the ammonia business. They had a special fellow from Utica that come there that handled that ammonia, because Jesus, you've got to know what you're doing with that there. You get suffocated with that pneumonia, see?
Yeah.
And he had gas masks and everything they work with there. And by God, he fell in that tank of that water that was 25, 30 below zero. By Jesus, it killed him.
Oh.
It killed him in there, right in that cold water.
Good Lord, Mr. Eastman. I'm sorry you told me about it.
Yeah. That water was so cold it killed him.
I was in the coldest I ever was 20 below zero.
How much?
20 below.
20.
Well,
why?
You might say that's not cold, but you couldn't walk 100 yards but if you didn't watch out, but what your nose would freeze.
I worked one day for the power company to 50 below zero, and how in hell we ever stood it, I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, 20. Even at 20, you see, you just can't expose anything.
Oh hell, I've worked lots of days at 20 below.
You don't have your nose sticking out.
Well, some of them fellas that had mustaches, you know, that's when they'd get that. Without Jesus, they'd freeze right over, you know, and have a hell of a time.
Yeah.
Freeze mustache.
Yeah.
You wore a mustache then.
That's a good picture.
He did.
That is a good picture, Mr. Eastman. I'm glad you saved that one.
Yeah, I
have. Is that the only one you got?
Yeah. Well, I got another picture just like it to home.
Yeah? Well, I'll swear,
see? I can make it look like him now.
Well, I don't know. It looks more like somebody else. I know people that I'd say that look like that, but not Mr. Eastman.
My next younger brother and I look so near alike. A lot of people couldn't tell us apart. And there was a fellow running the Empire State alfalfa mill up there. And they'd take this alfalfa hay and run it through a hammer mill, you know, and that made feed of it, see, ground it up. And I was looking for a job. That was before I was married. I was looking for a job, and the answer's right there at the railroad station, see. So they told me to come on, I think it was Thursday. It would be the first day of the month, see. They wanted me to come on to work Thursday. Well, Tuesday, my other brother was down there at the station for something. And this old German fellow, his name is Fietz, F-I-E-T-Z, Fietz. He says to my brother, he says, come on over and go to work. He says, we need a man right now. He says, ain't no need to wait until Thursday. So, Jid, my brother went over there and went to work. Well, Thursday morning, I went down to go to work. And old Feet stood there, and he looked, you know, and he backed up, and he said, mein Gott, he said, are there two of you boys? Well, by God, he says, I couldn't tell the difference. He says, you come in, go to work too, just the same. So, we both worked there.
Now, which one was that? That's not the one you tell me about.
That's the one that's sick in bed there and has been for 15 years. He had a stroke. There was one time up there we run that alfalfa mill right straight through and never stopped the machine. We run three shifts and everybody had to work two out of the three shifts. We worked 8 hours and had our supper and we went right to bed. Well, then in 8 hours we got up and ate again. And then 4 hours we had a lunch, and another 4 hours we had again and went back to bed. See? So we was working working 8 hours and sleeping 8 hours and then working 8 hours again. And we just kept that thing a-rolling, had the big orders.
Yeah.
And it was right on the railroad, and my job was running the bagger all of the while, see? And then there was another fella, two fellas, was trucking it out and piling it in the car. And they get one car loaded and then just release the brakes on it, you know, and push it down the line a little bit and run another car back down there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you were putting away some money then.
Yeah.
It seems when you never spent any money much, did you?
No, the lawyers took it all.
Yeah. All at one time.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
I was working there in the alfalfa mill when I got married.
Yeah. It's a wonder you hadn't, if that was a good job, it's a wonder you hadn't stayed with them.
Yeah, well, they wanted me to stay there. They didn't want me to take, I took off 2 weeks the time I got married. And they didn't want me to take off any time because they bought out another outfit down in Lutz, Pennsylvania. And they wanted me to go down there with another fella and take the machinery out and bring it up there.
Yeah.
Well, I got married, and I told him I was going to get married. By God, he says, I don't blame you one damn bit. He was a good old German fella there. He says, the American people, he says, their tongues are too long, he says, to speak German. He said, they can't say sprechen, he says.
The tongue gets in the way.
They can't say sprechen, he says. The tongue is too long.
Yeah.
Well,
you had some of all of them, didn't you?
Yeah, I've been through a lot in my lifetime.
You had some Germans and all sorts there.
But you know, I had 2 years of German in high school. Maybe you did too. Maybe you had more than that. But at that time, you know, I could go in there where them Germans was talking, and if I paid strict attention, I could catch about three quarters of what they were talking about.
Yeah. I never studied German, Mr. Eastman. I learned a little German over in Germany.
Yeah.
I just went over there and got me a little book and started talking a little bit. And I got so I could speak it pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eins mal konnte ich Deutsch nicht zu schlecht gebrauchen. I don't speak it anymore at all, you see.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Eastman, are you gone now?
To over on 500 and the end of this visit with Mr. Eastman at the tail end of his job out here this Tuesday, the 14th of May, 1974. Channel 2 over, around 500, and the end of the visit of Mr. Eastman at the tail end of this job, this long job of his, this Tuesday, the 14th of May, 1974. Channel 2 over, around 500, and the end of the visit with Mr. Eastman this Tuesday, the 14th of May, 1974.